You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 502 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland. Candidly, I am recording 502 before 501, and that is because a great friend of the podcast is joining me today, and his name is Robbie Callen. What's up, man?
What's going on? I'm supposed to be 500.
Hey, this is true. Robbie,
what happened?
I got a sort of a big guest. People have probably heard it by now. Shouts to Hawks PR and especially John Steinberg.
Steiny Mo.
For putting this up for me. But I got Travis Schlenk for episode 500. So if you somehow missed that.
No, that was good stuff.
Go back and listen to me and Travis, episode 500. And then 501, actually, is the recap pod from the New Year's Eve game in Indiana. So if you guys are listening to this.
Little 3 p.m. in the afternoon tip.
Yeah.
This is on a Monday.
Just for a little bit of clarity, we're recording this Sunday night before that game. So whatever Robbie and I say does not include the Indiana game. And if you want that more detailed stuff on that game, go back and listen to 501. But because I bumped Robbie from his spot, this is supposed to be the recording time and everything for episode 500. So Robbie's very gracious. And instead, this will be the first spot of 2019. So you're sort of at a different leadoff spot now, kicking off the new year. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So, you know, as you and I are prone to do, we'll sort of bounce around a little bit on today's pod. No firm agenda. I did want to ask you about a few guys and kind of what you thought so far. It's been a while since you've been on. And then we'll sort of transition into Robbie's story time and stuff that we always do. But let's just start with Trae Young, because that's the hot topic. He has been the hot topic all season long. You and I talked about him a lot in the offseason. But I think this is the first time since the season started, maybe, for you and I in this form. Maybe not.
Maybe
there's one early, but he's been really good lately. Granted, I'm sure he could have had a bad game on Monday if we're talking now, but
he's gonna have like a dozen turnovers.
It's in play, but no, listen, he's
4 for 18.
He's been pretty good lately. There was a bit of a fun tongue in cheek moment from both Young and Lloyd Pierce on Saturday when Pierce took him out really fast on Saturday after a rough start. And I asked Pierce about after the game, and he kind of referenced that Trae knew what happened, and Trae was kind of sheepish about it. He was really good after that, but it's a little push and pull of being a rookie. But what have you seen from Trae? I mean, that's obviously he's a very, very polarizing player, and lately he's been a lot more efficient, which has been nice to see. But,
right.
What are your thoughts on him to this point in the season?
I think he's just getting more comfortable. You know, I mean, like we talked about this when he got drafted. Like, you know, it takes a while for rookie point guards to get comfortable in the league, because it takes every rookie some time to get comfortable with their own game. And then when you have to factor in, like, he's got to run the show for a team that doesn't really have another ball handler. Like, it's even harder for Trae. I wrote about this a couple weeks ago, and just it's really hard to kind of evaluate him, because he's in a situation where he's being asked to do a ton, and there's already a steep learning curve. He doesn't really have anyone to like lean back on and like be like, you know, in, let's say, crunch time situations, there's not really anybody you can play him with to like take over ball handling role, because like if you play him and Jeremy Lin together, your backcourt defense is non-existent completely. Like, you can't play those two together and have any semblance of a defense. So what you do is you play him with Baze, and Baze can't really – he's not an on-ball guy. We saw that the year after he signed his contract. I remember we talked on here about the Baze regression and people wondering why. It's like, well, suddenly he was being asked to do a lot more in a role that was uncomfortable to him, and that was facilitating being on ball more – and Baze has always been best as a cutter slasher spot up guy on offense, and then just bringing energy to everything you do. And I think we've seen him kind of get back to that a little bit this year, because they're just letting Trae do things. Like, they're just saying, okay, Trae, you go out and do stuff. And that's kind of why I feel like Baze has looked better this year, is because there is somebody running the show. There is somebody, you know, moving the ball to kind of initiate stuff. And I think Trae, one thing that he does better than Dennis right now already is initiate an offense and try to run it. You know, like he tries to get guys involved. Like Dennis didn't always try to get everybody involved consistently. And like, I do think that's something that we've seen from Trey this year. That's by far the most positive thing is his facilitating and playmaking. And the question's been like, okay, when or will the shooting come around? And we're starting to see the shooting come around a little bit, and that's a really good sign. The finishing at the rim's been a little better this year than some of us thought maybe the worst could be, but it's still not great. He's shooting a little better, and I think it's just a comfort thing with his game. And just slowly getting more comfortable into when he can find his spots. I think he's not forcing shots quite as much. He still takes some questionable shots, but we knew he was going to do that the entire time. I just really think it's a matter of him being more comfortable, and I think the ball's moving better. I think, you know, the kind of elephant in the room is they're playing better without Taurean right now. And on offense, when you look at the assist numbers and you look at the way they're moving the ball, it really isn't a surprise when you look at the fact that Taurean's one of the worst assist forwards in the league.
Yeah, I mean, over the last over the time that he's been out, the Hawks are leading the league in assist rate, and that's not a coincidence. You know, it's not all Taurean. Right. There are reasons beyond
but the ball moves better. Yeah. And when the ball moves, this is something in the piece I wrote about, is like they need to do stuff to get Trey shots that aren't him just dribbling into shots, because he's just not been a good spot-up shooter this year. It's actually been pretty awful, his spot-up shooting. And so my dog is squeaking the shit out.
I was about to say, shouts to the dog for making an appearance on the podcast.
Shouts to Bella, just squeaking away. But one of the things that they can do, and I think they've been doing a little better job of with Trey, is trying to get him shots that aren't solely his own creation. And part of the thing you can do, and I wrote about this right after the Warriors game, is like the one thing that I think he should be looking at the Steph Curry comp for is the way Steph will pass and immediately run to his spot. Like Steph creates a lot of his own shots by passing and moving before the defense reacts. Because when you pass, there's a kind of a natural thing for defenders where they kind of look at where the pass went. Because so few guys immediately dart to a new spot for a shot. And Steph's as good as there's ever been at passing it to a big man in the high post from maybe one wing and darting to the opposite wing where his guys kind of, oh, and like, then he's a couple steps behind, then it's a catch and shoot opportunity for Steph. And those are the types of things that I think the Hawks can continue to do more of. But I think they're doing a little bit better job of helping Trey get to his spots rather than it just be all him dribbling into his own shots.
For sure. And I think, you know, his usage is definitely down in terms of his long range shooting, as you mentioned. There's still some, you know, there's the occasional bad shot, and he's made a few of them. You know, there was one of the big pull ups down the stretch the other night.
Oh,
where it was
my
like,
God, against Minnesota!
Yeah, it was his from only attempt at the, of 30? The night, and it was like 29 footer, I think, that he made.
Dude, yeah, I mean, like, and like that, you're gonna live with those shots, and like he's probably gonna hit 30% of them, maybe if you're lucky.
But he's picking his spots better.
He is picking his spots better, and I think it comes down to him being more comfortable. I think having John has really helped, and he's getting a kind of a better rapport with John. And having that secondary guy that's like able to produce, you know, like John's not, you don't, you know, last year we, you know, he's best, you know, getting at the rim and those sort of things, but he's improved his mid-range shooting this year. From last year, he's still not really capable of knocking down the threes, although he had a corner three, I think, against Cleveland or something like that. That was kind of big, but he's not capable of spacing the floor that way. But having that secondary offensive option that really can be a primary option for Trey, I think, is really helping him out. and just they're kind of building a rapport, and each game that they play together, you can see that pick and roll kind of partnership building, and Trey's throwing some really great, you know, roll passes to him, and it's I think that's helping, and that's also helping the spacing for Trey to get off shots, because teams have another guy they have to respect in that regard, and it helps Trey's spacing. So just all in all, I think you're seeing a more comfortable Trey, and you're seeing kind of the effect of what John can have on him with what he's able to do as kind of a pick and roll duo.
For sure. I think people got tired of me referencing this early on in the season when I was talking about how bad the Hawks were and how much they missed John Collins. It's very evident that they needed him, and I think he's the best player on the team. If he's not, he's definitely in the top two alongside Bazemore. Collins, just for a bit of a reference, since he came back, and again, this is before the game on Monday that you're probably listening to this podcast after, but as we record this, the Hawks were 7-10 since Collins rejoined the starting lineup after coming back. They lost the first two games when he was in this like very reserve role coming back from the injury kind of slowly, but since he returned in a full capacity, they're 7-10. That's not a huge surprise. I mean, that's probably better than they actually are in terms of the talent on the roster, but just being markedly better with John Collins is not a huge surprise. The gap between him and everybody else at the four is massive. That's not any breaking news to anybody. But just having him as a lob threat, having him as someone who can collapse the defense, also a little bit more of a floor game from him this season, you know, with the ball in his hands. Not a ton of that stuff, but there's still some of that. The Hawks want to see him do that more. And, you know, having, as you mentioned, pick and roll threats, you know, Trey can work with Deadman, he can work with Lynn, but it's not the same thing. Collins just brings a lot more attention. And if you're working with Deadman and Lynn and Spellman or whoever else, the focus will be on Trey. Whereas if it's Trey and John, there's still plenty of attention paid to Trae Young, but you can't just mess around and leave John Collins or he'll beat you up. And we've seen that, you know, in the games that the Hawks have won in the seven games, he's averaging 20-11 in those seven games that they've won with him in the lineup. So it's kind of, the numbers are great for John. That's another topic that I actually wanted to ask you about. We can sort of bridge into that now. Collins is putting up these crazy numbers. Like, it's not, it's not 30-15, but, you know, he's basically averaging 20-10 since he came back, or close to it on a full-time basis. It's 18.5 points, 10.1 rebounds per game in 17 games. And it feels real in that when he doesn't even play that well, I think even Pierce has said this, like there are games when Collins is just okay, or maybe even a little bit worse than that, and he'll just wake up with like 15-9. Mm-hmm. And that's a good sign of someone who's productive and active, and he plays really hard all the time. That really helps. But you see 19-10 and you're thinking like, you know, all-star flashing lights above your head. And I think fans are getting really excited, which, you know, with good reason. He's been really good this year. But step back a little bit. Obviously, you're covering the league nationally now after covering the Hawks closely. What is your perception of John? I know, like, locally, I think he's, like, again, a very exciting player. But take a step back, and what are you sort of seeing from him both this year and sort of big picture?
I mean, I think look, Hawks fans aren't the only ones getting excited about John Collins. I mean, we've seen
there was John Collins last week.
Just randomly, Pena and Flannery both ran like big John Collins features, and it's like, okay.
Here's the secret: the Hawks went to New York that week, and New York has a lot of writers. Boston.
They went to New York and Boston, I think.
Yeah, and those guys have there are a lot of writers that live in New York and Boston.
It's funny. It's like if we joke all the time, like if you're gonna write about a guy, you better do it before they go to New York or LA, because this year especially, there's so many people that cover the Lakers, but there's not that many interesting stories on the Lakers that like writers are just like hanging around the visitor locker room finding things to write about.
Yeah, so and John earned it, by the way. Like, John was awesome.
Oh,
and I think
for sure.
It's good, and I know a lot of Hawks fans were excited to see the national love for him, because number 19 overall pick, he's sort of, you know, on this rebuilding team, he's not getting a ton of national love, and I think that's always sort of a puff your chest out moment if you're a Hawks fan. Like, there's our guy getting some love, and I totally get that. It's kind of just interesting to sort of see that dichotomy of like those guys are reporting on him as this like really undercovered, underrated player, which I think is true nationally. Sure. But then you go locally and people are talking about him like, I'm not really kidding. I'm hearing a lot of like all-star stuff with John Collins, and I'm not there yet for that.
No. I mean, here's the thing is like you have to remember everything that happens on this Hawks team has kind of be taken in the perspective of like them having to do this. Like the nice thing is he's doing this. He's doing it pretty efficiently. Like, I think like, I got his numbers pulled up. It's pretty incredible. He's taking almost 60% of his shots inside 3 feet, and he's hitting 74% of them. Like, that's a good sign. Like, that's a really good sign that he's able to get to his spots. And again, I think that this comes with the Trey stuff, because 24% of his 24% of his field goal attempts are dunks, which is pretty awesome. And 72% of those are assisted, which means people are finding him a lot of times. That's Trey. That's Lynn. So you're seeing nice pick and roll work. And I think, you know, I remember I talked last year and some Hawks fans got mad at me because I said, you know, like, we don't know if John's a starter in the league. And I was like, oh, come on. It's like, we don't. Like, you know, he played on a good team. Do we know he's a starter in the league? I think now you can talk me into it. I think there are still the defensive questions, and I don't know if that's ever going to be fixed. There's still the question of where exactly you play him.
And who he plays with is almost as big a thing for me.
Yes. And so, because he's not the quickest guarding guys on the perimeter, like, he doesn't move super well out there. So when he's playing the four, he can kind of get taken out onto an island by some of the more athletic fours in the league. And it becomes a bit of an issue, but he's been great. And I think Hawks fans should be excited about him, because even if you got a starting caliber guy, like, I'm not ready to be like, John Collins is a future All-Star. He may be. He could continue to develop. He could become just a guy that, like, look, there are a lot of guys in the league that are, like, not good defensively, but so good offensively, it doesn't matter.
And if you're averaging 20 and 10 on a better team, you get a lot more notice. So, absolutely. Like, you can kind of fall. And I think, again, he's the kind of guy who's going to fall into numbers, but between his finishing around the rim
and his activity.
His activity. And, I mean, just as a reference point there, as of this moment, he's number 15 in the league offensive rebound rate. And basically, that's. Everybody else that's on this list, essentially, aside from John Collins, is a full-time center. He's the number one guy that's not a full-time center on this list that I'm looking at in terms of offensive rebounding, and that's because, you know, part of that's him missing his own shots and getting more rebounds, but still, like, he's just all over the place on the glass, and that's a huge strength of his. And as young as he is and as springy as he is, that's going to continue.
Yeah, I mean, and that really goes to the thing that you talk about who he plays with, and if you're Travis Schlenk, as you go forward with roster construction, and at this point, I think you're looking at Trey, John, and Herder are for sure your three guys you're thinking right now are going to be parts of your team moving forward for sure. I think there's going to be a question to have to be asked of what Taurean Prince's role is with the team moving forward.
For sure.
And I think he's a part of it. I think they want him to be a part of it. But the effort's got to get better from him to do that. And that's kind of the cold, hard truth, because, you know, he's got so many of the talents that you want as a 3-and-D guy from his spot-up shooting numbers. Like, he can get buckets. We know this. Defensively, he's just got to put in the effort. And then offensively, he's got to be better at team basketball. Like, none of this is a shock if you watch Taurean Prince. Like, it's just not. But he could be there. So, like, let's say those are your four guys. So as you're building this roster, you're looking at centers to pair him with. John, those offensive rebounding stats are great, but it also indicates that as a four, he's hanging around the paint almost all the time, as does shooting 74% of his shots inside 3 feet.
Yep.
That means spacing-wise, you can't have a center that also needs to occupy that space. It just doesn't work, especially with Trey, who's done his most of his damage attacking the rim. At some point, you got to have somebody that can kind of pivot out and at least be operating in an elbow to, you know, 3-point range type area. And I think that's going to be the interesting thing for them moving forward with how they figure out who to put next to John. Like you said, like his activity's great. He plays with the effort you want. Like you'd love if every guy on the team could play with John Collins' effort. Like if
to,
you had
to the point where you get for me, to the point where it's a good example of this is like I get afraid when he's in the game in like lopsided situations because he's still
because
playing
he's
so hard. And he has no other way, which is great. I mean, the motor stuff is great with John, but he doesn't know how to turn it off. Like there are games where he'll get undercut, it'll look terrible, and then two minutes later he's doing it again, and it's like John, you got to relax. But you can't tell him that because that's what you like about him. He's going to play super hard. And I think roster building wise, as you sort of mentioned there, it's tough because I've long said I think he's a center, which is kind of more about the way the league is moving than anything else. You don't see a ton of guys at 6'10" who play the way he does around the rim that are full-time fours. It's not really a thing that happens anymore. But I also understand the questions that people have, and I guess the biggest pushback I get is, look, he's not that long and he's not that strong. And I get that, but that's why it's so tough to build around him in some ways, because you have to get that like perfect center alongside him that can probably protect the rim
and shoot,
et cetera, et cetera.
And this again goes back to the question of what is his best role on a good team. And it might be super sub six man. Like you usually think of those guys as being, you know, usually talk about guards when you're talking about the best six men and guys that give the spark and offensively. It might be a thing where on a good team, like there might be those questions about rim protection, and you might need to like put somebody else, you know, put a different construction around, but he can still give you 28-30 minutes off the bench in the right matchups, close games, start games if you need to, but in the other matchups be a sixth man type guy that comes in, brings you that energy and effort with the bench unit, which is often the – oh, my God, I just watched Evan Turner miss a dunk. shouts to the villain. It's okay. They're up like 30 on Philly. But, yeah, I mean, like there, it's a possibility that that's going to be his best role on a good team. But no matter what, like you just – it's okay to be excited about him right now. And this is what happens. Like fans of mediocre to bad teams, this is kind of part of, you know, for lack of a better term, part of the process of being a bad team is getting excited about young guys that, you know, may not live up to the full ceiling of what fans think they can be, but like this is part of the fun, is imagining what, you know, John Collins is going to be an all-star and these sorts of things, and that's okay because eventually you're going to be putting together a team that's more competitive. And maybe he shakes out as a sixth man. Maybe he's, you know, your starting center, but you have a better rim protector on the bench that kind of you play situationally and different stuff and whatever you do. But like, I mean, the most extreme example of this is obviously the process Sixers, and anybody that knows Mike Levine and those guys, like they loved all of their players. Like they got super excited about everybody. You know, and that's part of what you're trying to do. So yeah, you're going to get excited about, you know, Kevin Herter lighting it up from three. I think Kevin Herter's been great. Also, Kevin Herter facially, the least NBA player looking NBA player in the league.
He had an incredible celebration.
Looks like a child.
The other night, where I am not cool enough to say, but there was some people making fun of his whiteness after a celebration the other night, which goes into that as well. He looks like, if you just saw him and you didn't realize he was legit like 6'6", 6'7",
right?
Like I've seen him in the locker room. He's obviously a very large man, but he's very skinny and he's very baby face, and you see some of his mannerisms, it's kind of amusing in a lot of ways.
Yeah, like I don't think he can grow facial hair.
I that would not surprise me if he can't. He's still a very, very young looking individual,
and like he looks like a 16-year-old, but that's all right because he knocks down shots. Like, the dude's lighting it up. He's been great.
He can play.
I think, you know, like, of all the draft picks from slot value, I think right now he's probably giving you the most.
Oh, almost certainly. I mean, the trade conversation is one that's obviously the jury is out, and I think there's a lot of talent, a lot of upside there.
Oh, for sure.
And he's been much better, as we talked about earlier. But at this moment, the safest of the three draft picks is Kevin Herter. I'm not sure it's particularly close. You know, Herter
Yeah, and you
looks
have to
to
be thrilled with
me,
that.
yeah, I mean, at 19, he looks to me like, you know, you never want to just proclaim that the guy's a definite NBA starter, but I would be stunned if he was not a quality rotation player for a long time.
Oh, for sure.
And that's already a home run at 19. So,
I mean,
yeah.
then he's got that the toolkit you're looking for, like as far as like a wing dude. Like you mentioned the size, like he can continue to add strength,
He needs to, for sure.
which is something that you definitely want to see him do, especially on the it's not and it really it's not just the defensive end. It's like, you know, his next step on offense is going to be when guys start closing out hard on him, being able to kind of put it on the deck and get to the rim and, you know, get to the foul line and do things like that to kind of expand his game beyond, you know, spot up shooting as kind of just his main thing. And that's, you know, that's perfectly fine right now for what he's doing and what he is. And he's showing the ability to hit a high volume at an efficient level from three, which is fantastic. But yeah, I mean, you look at him, he's got the tools and, you know, defensively he moves his feet well and, kind of, you know, again, and this is, you know, we talked about the effort with John Collins, like Herter is another guy that you can watch and, you know, you can see the effort is there. And you know, as again, as the strength gets better, he'll fare better on the wing against, you know, bigger threes in the league and bigger twos. But, yeah, it's been really, and again, like if you're a Hawks fan, you have to be thrilled to get two rotation players at 19 in back-to-back years. Like that doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's already again like it's already a home run. I sort of alluded to that with Travis about how just the sweet spot of 19 apparently, and the Travis Lenkerry, he's two for two with those. But yeah,
Maybe the Mavs pick will fall at 19.
I doubt it, but it's not impossible. I wouldn't
I mean,
say
it's not
it's
out of the
likely,
realm of possibility. I
but
mean, if they're the 8 seed in the West,
they'll be picking it.
That's
Yeah,
about right.
about
That's
there.
about right.
That's
Because
true.
there will be three worse teams in the East, I think, this year than the 8th team in the
Oh,
West.
almost certainly. Probably. Yeah, three is the right
That's
number.
three, because
Yeah.
there's five. There's like the top five,
The massive
and then there's
drop.
the clump
Yeah.
where the Orlando Magic are half game out.
Oh, Lordy. That's another
That
subject
was
for another day.
a bad bet.
Yeah, the under on that was not looking great.
That's a good point.
But anyway, that's probably enough on just like guys. I know
Sure.
we could talk about the whole roster. I do
Talk about
want to
dudes.
get one more question into you about the actual team this year before we move on to some other stuff. But real quickly, I want to tell people about the Locked On Podcast Network. Please subscribe to this podcast, but we also have an entire network of shows on the NBA, the NFL, college football, college basketball, Major League Baseball, whatever you like to like fancy and follow and listen to. We should have a show for that. If we don't, well, then we'll have one very, very shortly. And yeah, please subscribe. And after this short break, we'll come back with more of Robbie Callant. All right, Robbie, we're back. And one more question about this year's team. You know, all the stuff that we talk about, the Hawks are playing really well right now, admittedly against some pretty bad competition, which is definitely worth noting. Do you see the Hawks as, it's kind of a tough time to answer this question, but are they still in the bottom tier of three or four teams, or are they a little bit better than that moving forward? Because I know people, one of the things people were talking about during this run is getting worried about the lottery picks. I'm not worried about that if I'm a Hawks fan just now because they haven't won enough to pull away from the field. But are they still in that same range with, you know, Chicago and some of those bad teams?
I think right now, yes. I think they're still in the Chicago, New York, Cleveland, Phoenix tier of those 5 teams. I still think there's a break before you get to the next tier, which is like Washington and Orlando and
The
Detroit.
John
And
Wallace Washington Wizards, by the way.
it's about to get ugly in Washington. Boy.
To be fair, they've actually been pretty decent without him for a while, but it's a little bit different when you know he's out for the probably out for the season or close to it. That's a little bit different
Um,
than
they were
just
they
going short
were they
spots.
were kind of okay last year without him. Like,
I
it's
looked it
not
up.
gonna
They're
they're
like
not
22 and 24 or something in their last 46 without him, which is not terrible. in the East.
Yeah, I mean, the problem for them is they weren't good enough with him to, like, be a 500 team and make the playoffs without him. So, like, they're going to be slightly below 500. Like, I just think that's who they are, even if they get right, quote-unquote. And, like, they're too far behind. Like, it's kind of amazing they're already six games behind. Like, that's a hole that's going to be tough to dig out of, even with mediocrity ahead of them.
Yeah, getting into that kind of hole into before the calendar flips to 2019 is really tough.
Good.
For the East. That's bad.
I still think Atlanta's there. I think it's going to be a really rough stretch without Baze here coming up, because I think it's just tough for them to replace all the stuff he does.
Them
on both ends of the floor. Like, we mentioned the energy. I mentioned, like, he's best when he's spotting up and cutting. But, like, that's important to have a guy that does that moves without the ball as well as he does. And then on defense, just kind of the energy he brings them and the effort there. Like, he's not an elite defender, but he's, you know, he's a good defender on a bad team. So his numbers don't look great. But, like, the on-off splits – aren't fun defensively without Baze.
And also, as much as we talked about Torian earlier, being without both of them at the same time just leaves you in this really, really weird spot on the wing where you have Herter, you have Bembry, and those guys are fine, but behind them, I love Justin Anderson more than anyone, but if he's your third wing, you're not in the greatest spot, and then you have your fourth wing spot of, it's now Tyler Dorsey, Daniel Hamilton. There's not a lot of depth there, let's just say, until Torian gets back.
Justin Anderson with the positive 12.8 net rating in 147 minutes.
Can we talk about that block from last week? Justin Anderson, just annihilation. I know I lost my mind about this on Twitter and on the show, but because I know you talked about this with me, that was preposterous, and I almost fell out of my chair in the arena. I almost knocked the great Kevin Chernard out of his chair with a violent motion on press row. I don't normally get that way about basketball in the arena, but that one got me.
Spectacular stuff. Again, like, that's, you know, he's a guy that gives the energy. I think the nicest thing right now for the Hawks, like, your dudes you want to trade at the deadline are all playing like beasts.
And then Baze goes down. But yeah,
Baze goes down. But, like,
Lynn, Dedmon, and Bazemore all playing well.
Dedmon. Somebody's going to be willing to part with a second for Dedmon.
Yeah, it gets tricky, as we all know. Like, you know, Dedmon makes pretty reasonable money, so his is probably the easiest one to trade. All those guys have value in different ways, but it's the NBA. Matching salary makes everything.
Oh, for sure.
It's just
for sure.
People
I just
this. I know you don't, but people do.
It's awesome. Yeah, I mean,
it's like,
oh,
just trade him now. I'm like,
to whom?
Yeah, I tweeted about how I thought Bazemore was playing the best basketball of his career, and I mean that. I think he really is. And of course, half the responses were sell high right now, and I'm like, well,
they would love to.
$19 million for next year, so it's not that easy to trade.
No, that's why. Like, I know the injury is tough timing for trying to move him, but it's still hard to move that contract. Like,
well, I mean, the only way to do it is taking back bad money, and they know that. I mean, Travis even sort of not really about baseball specifically, but talked about it on the pod about how they realize that if they want to keep their books clean, they want to get assets of the future, and that basically probably means if they're going to take back a bad contract, it's not going to come without compensation. Like, they're going to want a first round pick or a young player on a cost control contract, but that still has to have the bad money involved in it. That's why all the stuff that you hear with Bazemore, even if it's just chatter, involves Brandon Knight or involves somebody like that. That's just like almost dead money, bad money, you know, Solomon Hill, that kind of type of player, because obviously the Hawks don't quote unquote want Brandon Knight or Solomon Hill, but if you have to match salary and your goal is to get a pick or a young player, you have to take the bad salary. It's just the only way it works.
Oh yeah. And I mean, that's, you look at what the Cavs have done this season in moves, is like, they, you know, that's what you do when you are a rebuilding team, is you take on some bad. There's a reason Mozgov's been bouncing around. Like,
well, that's been a fun one with Orlando. There was, I guess, somebody reported something somewhere about Jeremy Lin in Orlando. And it was like, well, the only way that works is if they're trading Mozgov. And that means the Hawks have Mozgov and Plumlee on the same roster. So that's, I mean, because the Magic literally don't have anything else to trade that they will be willing to part with,
right,
for Jeremy Lin.
Yeah.
So if it's a two-team trade, it almost has to be Mozgov and a first-rounder for Jeremy Lin, and that is really brutal to have what becomes like $30 million in dead center money on your roster.
That's fun.
Yeah, fun. Anyway, that's, I mean, fun. we're off the rails, but it's I think your point is taken on the fact that the Hawks are still in the bottom race. I think it's too early to, you know, quote unquote, worry about wins. There was really some of that this week, especially. I mean, I get it. When you win 5 out of 6, I understand it.
And you like win an overtime game against Minnesota, and like,
I get it.
But like, again, this, you know, the schedule has not exactly been difficult right now. You're about to go through a 2 week stretch, probably more without Baze. Don't worry about the wins right now. Be excited that the young guys are playing well. The thing is like the time you get upset about wins is like if he was like if you know Lloyd Pierce was benching Trae Young for Jeremy Lin and they were winning, then you have all the right in the world to be upset.
Or if the young guys, Kevin Herter or whatever else, they're going
right, if
only
like,
vets and yeah.
If they were playing vets only, like look, like enjoy the fact that Vince Carter's dropping 21 in the game because that's just cool. Like Vince Carter's 41 years old. That's awesome that he's able to do that and still Vince Carter. But like he's not taking opportunity away from anyone that needs it right now. Like he's playing because Torian Prince is playing as many minutes as he is because Torian Prince is out and they don't have that option to at the four, like they're thin. So yeah, it's fine. Like the young guys are playing well. Enjoy that. Like, there are some bad teams out there. Like, you're not beating the Suns. And also, if there's ever a year for it, it's now when the lottery odds are flattened out. You know, like
14%.
You don't get 25% for first. You get 14% for the top three. And it's even and it's still smooth for after that. So, like, if you have the fifth best odds, you're still right in there. You know?
I think I'm leading the league in terms of people tweeting and talking about 14% as a theme. People just don't have any concept of the fact that the Hawks could lose every game the rest of the season and they will have a 14% chance.
14% chance. And, like, so this is kind of what the league wanted out of it, was for teams like the Hawks to feel okay about a stretch like this. And, like, I think that's good.
And I think the whole time, I mean, even the front office, I know people don't really believe me, but I firmly believe, and I've heard this off the record enough to know, the Hawks don't want to be terrible. They don't want to be 9-73. They don't want that. They know the benefits of rebuilding and getting high draft picks. No one's disputing that. But they don't have any desire to be 12-70, or they wouldn't have done a lot of things that they've done. They brought back.
They wouldn't have signed Jeremy Lin
Deadman Lin. All that. I mean, you could see there's a number of these things where the Hawks could have gone full process Sixers, and they didn't do that. Look at the roster from the process Sixers. It will make you want to fall out of your chair. It's so bad. I mean, Hollis Thompson led the NBA in minutes one season. Like it's kind of insane how bad those teams were. The Hawks have never been that, and they don't want to be. They don't want to be.
They're not the Bobcats from 2007 or whatever.
Yeah, what they don't want to be Orlando and win 32 games. They don't want that. But they do want to be competitive. And I think, you know, Travis said that on the podcast. They're not upset that they're winning games right now.
No.
Like, no one's bothered by this, except for some of the, like, more extreme fans, which I understand. I get the whole concept of it, but they're not. They want to be competitive.
The 14% thing is a big deal, and kind of helps a team like the Hawks because, you know, this is the point the league was trying to make, is like young teams can continue to try to learn to win and do these sort of things without the punishment of, you know, losing draft position because you won like three games in December because some guys got hot. You know, think of the Bulls last year, like, because Nikola Mirotic, like, could not miss for 2 weeks of the season. They probably lost 5 spots in draft position.
Yeah, they won, like, 7 extra games in 2 weeks. Like, they were unconscious. Yep. It was hilarious.
They just, like, the Bobby Portis Mirotic combo, like, fueled by punch anger, like, could not lose for 2 weeks. It was hysterical. And like they literally moved from they got the 7th pick, and like they should have been a top 3 team.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's why I understand some of what Hawks fans were getting a little bit worried about this week.
Yeah, absolutely.
With that said, I don't think there's any reason to think that this is going to, A, continue at this level.
No. Remember when the Knicks won, like, 5 in a row last year? It's like, dude, sometimes, like, teams just click. And, like, I get wanting the pick. I get embracing kind of the rebuild. But, like, at the same time, enjoy some prosperity briefly, because this is fun. Like, it's fun watching Trey and John play as well as they are. Herder's hitting big shots. Like that Timberwolves game is just fun. Like, it's fun to have that game and to win that game.
You got the GOAT Bob Rathbun just losing his mind on the stretch and in overtime. It was just a lot of fun. I mean, it's a Friday night game. They're playing a game that they probably shouldn't have won. The Wolves tried to give it away. They threw that, Dario threw that terrible pass to Bazemore that he stole for the dunk. It was just fun. It's just a crazy NBA game, and they won it. That's part of the deal.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, before we get out of here, as I know you got a lot of stuff to do, I know I have stuff to do as well, I'm going to let you pick. There's a wide range here you can be choosing from. I'm going to ask you, without any prompting, for one Atlanta Hawks beat writer story that you have. And you were on the beat for a while. You're now on to bigger and better things over there in the great Flagstaff. But I need one Hawks-related behind the scenes something story from you from your entire time, and one that I think you haven't told so far. I mean, I think you've probably told a couple of these on this podcast, but I want to just open the floor up and say, pick one and fire it up.
Oh man, I'll tell a couple just in case I've told this one, because like this is easily my favorite. My all time favorite. So apologies if I've told this on the pod and the loyal listeners have heard it, but my all time favorite was when Joe Johnson got traded. And the next day they played – I can't remember who they played. But the next day they played somebody, and, everybody's kind of asking the question, like, oh, how did you find out Joe got traded, all this stuff. And like, so we asked Jeff the same, how did you find out Joe got traded? We knew Jeff and Joe were pretty close. And Jeff at the time was living in Joe's house. And – because, like, rookie contract Jeff didn't spend money. Current contract Jeff doesn't spend money.
I was going to say, Jeff Teague is not the most outlandish spender. Jeff, he's more of a chill guy. Let's just
People laughed when I tweeted when he got traded to Indiana. He was going to go live in his parents' house, and he went and lived in his parents' basement.
And he also got left in Detroit with a pizza box. So
sure did.
Jeff is a legend in a number of ways.
God bless Jeff Teague. But we asked Jeff, we're like, how did you find out Joe got traded? He's like, well, I was in Joe's house, and he texted me. We're like, he texted you? Like, was he home? Yeah. We're like, why did? So like, y'all were in the same house, in different rooms, and he sent you a text that he was traded. Like, that's fairly major news, especially for somebody like living in his house, because then the arrangement has to change a little bit, right?
It was a massive deal on a number of levels, but yeah. Just the logistics of the fact just that the you're living there.
Yeah. And Jeff, just deadpan, like dead serious, just, Joe's got a big house. I was like, well,
it's truly an all.
I can't argue that.
Joe had a lot of money and has a lot of money.
Joe has a lot of money. He has Joe has two Phantoms. Both are black. One has a dark silver hood to differentiate it. It's the only difference. I love it.
Joe made a lot of money and was really good for a long time.
He also has that like F-450 truck SUV tank thing. Shouts to Joe, who had no idea how to spend his money. So he like bought cars and one time bought $10,000 worth of champagne in London.
Oh, I forgot about the London game. That's a good story in itself.
Salute to the legend. I think that was after he got traded to Brooklyn. I think it was a Brooklyn Hawks game.
It was a Nets Hawks game in London.
It was
a Nets Hawks
game in London. It was an interesting game.
It's like a 3:30 tip off Eastern time.
Yeah, super weird. I was working at Macy's at the time, so like still, so like I was I think I listened to like the end on the radio. Shouts to the god Steve Holman.
Legend.
But yeah, like, yeah. So yeah, Joe used to, whenever Joe's teams come to Atlanta, he gets excited because he gets to drive his cars.
And Joe is now just chilling, I think, isn't he? Did Joe retire?
What is Joe up to? No, he's on a roster.
Is he?
Isn't he?
I think I'm embarrassing myself.
Joe Johnson.
Right now. I think Joe
Johnson. Did he retire?
Or if he's not officially retired, he's not on the team.
He last played. Okay, he did. Yeah, it says he last played for the Rockets. I thought he was still kicking out there.
Maybe he wants to come back. Like maybe he'll get a buyout call in April. Maybe he'll get one of those like we can't find anybody else calls. But I think
Joe, first ballot Hall of Famer. Also, the number two better be hanging in the Hawks rafter in the State Farm Arena at some point.
215 or should be
215 should be locks.
I agree with that.
You know where I stand on Josh. I think 5 should be up there, but I know a lot of fans will disagree with me.
I think you're on your own on that one, but I'd be more okay with
that. I'm also one of like 3 Josh Smith stands left in the world.
I was prepared for a Josh story when I asked you and opened the floor because
my favorite Josh story was he used to just like the thing is Josh, I don't have a lot of great Josh stories. Like one time he came back with Detroit. And I went up to him pregame and I was like, hey, man, can I get a couple minutes? And he was like, yeah, let me warm up. And I was like, all right. And I went out and Josh, it was like an hour before tip and locker rooms closed 15 minutes before tip. Josh did a 45-minute pregame where he just hoisted threes the whole time.
As one does.
At one point, Rasheed Wallace was with him because she was an assistant at the time. And she spent, I kid you not, 20 minutes shooting 2 basketballs at the same time, one righty and then one lefty, like in succession, and at least 5 times made both. It was one of the most impressive athletic feats I've ever seen in my life. Like 3 pointers, righty lefty, and like the right handed one would go in, and like immediately after it, the left hand one, like. He made the right-handed one probably 50% of the time, like one-handed, and then like occasionally would hit the left-handed one. It was spectacular.
Sheed is a freak, and I think it kind of always was an incredible talent.
Oh my god, one of the most talented individuals to ever play the game. And like when he tried, it showed on the court. But yeah, Josh, and then Josh like jogged by, and I looked down. I was just like, really? And he just started laughing. And I was like, I'm going to get you after the game. He was like, all right. But like, he just wanted to make me wait for 45 minutes, for fun. Cause that was what Josh did.
Yeah. I mean, at some point,
Josh would also give me like 20 minutes just after practice whenever I needed it. So
he's really, Josh was underrated in that way.
I don't want this to be like Josh was like a dick all the time. He had a weird sense of humor with some of us in the media. And sometimes he'd get mad at me because I would ask him why he shot so poorly, and he would roll his eyes and say, well, if you ever played basketball before, and I would be like, you went 4 for 22. Like, I don't think I need to play basketball to know, like, you should probably stop shooting from the perimeter when your only 4 makes were inside the restricted area.
The funny thing was everybody kind of likes Josh that's around him. Everyone's always liked Josh. It was the stuff like that that kind of drew people crazy. Was like, mm-hmm. Josh, I have eyes. What are you talking about? But people like Josh and people swear by Josh. So I'm not like, no shade.
He was always good to everybody. Always good to all the people in your room. Last one. So sometimes I used to just like shoot on the court when I first started doing stuff. Before games, for either team would come out and warm up. And one time I was shooting with Bo, and I was just, you know, on the far end of the court from where the Hawks come out, or where the Hawks used to come out. Apparently they switched benches or something, which
the whole arena is, I mean, the remodel, the locker room's in a different place, so they come out in a different, it's just very odd.
That's upsetting to me.
It's going
to
throw you off when you come back. I'll just say that.
It's going to be awful. I'm just going to go to the wrong place all the time and be mad. But Ivan Johnson
came sprinting out of the tunnel, across the whole floor. I was just like shooting. He comes sprinting out and just starts like gets in a defensive stance in front of me. And my genius idea was, here's Ivan Johnson. I should try to back him down from the 3-point line.
Like Mark Jackson in his prime?
Yeah, yeah, because like I defaulted to this is my only chance, as if that was going to be any better than trying to dribble by him. And Ivan might be the strongest individual I've ever met in my life. And Ivan grabbed me by like the outsides of my arms, like on the shoulder, squeezed me together. At this point, I probably weighed 310 at this point. I was a big boy. And like, I'm like, so he squeezes my arms together. I like keep my dribble. I'm just dribbling. He literally picks me up by my shoulders, just easy as could be. Like I was just a sack of potatoes. Lifts me up, walks me out about 5 feet, sets me down. I kept my dribble alive the whole time. So he's just laughing. And I just turned and threw a shot up that like hit the rim. And he just laughed and ran off the court. And shouts to Ivan, wherever
that,
you
that
are.
That was Ivan Johnson. Brand from at least one country, and also ejected from a summer league game
for breaking a broom.
You and I were at. That was a fun one.
Snapped a broom in half. That ruled.
He did. That was one of the coolest things I've ever seen at summer league. Maybe cool is the wrong word, but it was quite a performance from Ivan.
Ivan was a legend. Ivan used to come buy polo from me when I worked at Macy's.
That's
how we were tight.
That's just perfect, to be honest with you.
Just Ivan. That's really the players that liked me the most were Ivan and Perro.
Oh, Perro. Yeah, Perro was a fan favorite for a reason.
We were at the they used to do that charity casino night. Oh, I didn't tell that story. Okay, we'll go there.
We'll finish there, so we're not just firing. All. There. We got to save some of these for later.
Some
goodness.
So, well, one time, Perro just like at casino night, like ran across the room, like gave me a bear hug, and it was very scary at first because it was just like Perro running at me. But sweetest individual. But one night we were in the middle of the opera. It was me and Anthony Tolliver at a roulette table, getting it in. And I had strolled off to the bar and told Tolliver to play a couple numbers for me, and a bunch of us were all riding on 10. And I get back from with a reloaded beverage and some waters for AT, because that was his request. And we hit 10, and we're all celebrating, and Anthony and I like bumped the table, and apparently at casino night they use like weird folding tables that like are like pieced together in the middle but don't have like legs in the middle, and if you hit them at the wrong angle they'll like collapse in the middle. And so in the middle of opera, Anthony Tolliver and I sent a roulette table to its demise with chips and the wheel and just everything going to the ground. It was very exciting. Luckily, like it wasn't for real money, because people probably would have been upset.
Yeah, you can't do that in Vegas. Those will that will not go over well.
Well, also the Vegas tables are built with a little more integrity, apparently.
Yeah, a little
than
bit
that.
More woodwork going on there. Some more reinforcements.
So just be careful. If you're ever at like a casino night thing and the roulette table seems to be kind of like a two piece joint. Not a standard roulette table. Just be careful about bumping into it, because it might fall in half, and then everybody's staring at you. Shout out to AT, because he took the fall on that one.
Less than that's just one of those lessons for
me. My heart.
Yeah, lessons from Callan to live by. Don't mess up casino tables at casino nights, in like Midtown or something. All right, man. Well, thank you, as always. I knew that was going to go well, because it always does, and I enjoy the stories. I've heard them all, but people should always hear them. There are more. At some point, you and I will have to discuss our pending oral history of the Hawks-Warriors game from 2015.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be a discussion at some point we'll have to do.
The Raj Prashad Memorial Hockey Box.
We will be with signage and all. Anyway, well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Please plug yourself. Please plug the pod and everything that we do and all that fun stuff. People know where they can find you, but say it anyway.
Yeah. Clearly the thing I'm known the most for is host of the Puntcast with Tom Fornelli and Chip Ashton.
The best college football gambling podcast around. Let's just say
number one for those that enjoy idiocy
and
punts in the under. That's what we like. Unders in the 30s if you're dirty. We had one. Cheez-It Bowl. Salute.
Boy, that was an all-timer.
That Cheez-It Bowl was spectacular. We recorded in the middle of it. It was great. If you just for some reason want to listen to three idiots yelling about Grayson Muhlstein throwing four first half picks, we were watching. Puntcast, you can obviously read me up Rocks and Dime, Twitter at our Calend.
Food stuff on Instagram for Robbie also.
Food stuff on the gram at our Calend. We're out here because Flagstaff has approximately -2 good restaurants. So I have to cook everything. So follow me on the gram if you like the food pics. I'm working on my plating right now, trying to make those more appealing for the gram. So,
which is just an incredible sentence from you. Knowing you as long as I have, that was not something that I would have anticipated a few years ago from you. That was
chefing it up. No, we were not chefing it up back in the day, but we've had to figure it out. Made some delightful fried chicken the other week. Because there's not a good fried chicken restaurant. And as a Georgia boy, I can't let that stand. That's about it. You know, read the stuff, see the stuff, listen to the stuff. And yeah, man, that's where I'm at.
You'll be back soon. Again, my apologies for bumping you in favor of the Hawks general manager for episode
100. Unacceptable. Unacceptable. No, man, that was great. That's awesome. Get, you deserve it. You do. You're the real full-timer on the beat is all I'll say about that. You put in the work, my man, and I just, you know, the people might not always agree with you, but I hope they appreciate the work you put in on the grind as the side gig, putting in more work than most people that do it on a full-time basis. So shouts to you. I hope the people are always reading you at Peachtree because you give them the best coverage on the internet when it comes to the Hawks, the internet, or elsewhere, because there's not a newspaper of record covering the team anymore.
I'm staying away from that wholeheartedly, but thank you for the kind words, my friend.
No, it needs to be said, because I know you won't say it, but you truly do put in the best work on this team, and I know the people who appreciate it. So just want to make sure that's said.
Well, thank you, Robbie. Please follow Robbie. Please follow me if you want to at BT Roland. We work together over at Dime, so check out our stuff over there. If occasionally I write about national basketball things, and occasionally it's okay. I wrote about Michigan last week and Ronald Acuna for Monday, which is a baseball topic, but that'll be up there at some point on Up Rocks. Lots of stuff as we always do. But thank you to everyone listening. Thank you to Robbie, and we will see you guys later on in the week.